All right, folks, let's get started. Look, it works. Firstly, thanks for coming along, making the trek out to the Sheraton, delaying beer for 15 minutes. I'll try not to use the full 75 minutes, but then again, I always say that and end up using it. Make sure you can get to that beer at the end of the day. I know it's always hard sitting through sessions for a full length of the day, so we'll try and make it worth your while. The topic for today is security and management. I'm not going to be spending a lot of time in code. This is more about security and management and the tooling that sits around the things that you build than it is about writing code, although there are some places that that touch code. I'll also say I have a fairly substantial IaaS or virtual machine-centered bias in terms of the stuff that we frame in here. I will also reference out to the PaaS services in a number of places, but that's just the framing of where we're at. Having said that, by the end of the session, I hope that you have a great overview level across a broad set of Azure security and management services that you can use, whether you're a developer or an IT person. It's part of one of the things with DevOps is with these services being available in software, they're tremendously easier to use and take advantage of, even if you're a developer. So with that, what are the services that I'm talking about? So in Azure, we looked at security and management and the security and management landscape, and we recognized that historically people have sourced their runtime platform, whether it be Windows or Linux, from somewhere, and then sourced their management platform or platforms from a variety of different vendors. And that's fine, and many people still do that on Azure and are welcome to. But we also recognize that uniquely, because we build Azure, and Azure as a platform, we could build management into Azure and security into Azure to kind of blur the lines between what in the boxed software world used to be a runtime platform, Windows, and a management platform, System Center, Tivoli, whatever, or a security platform, Symantec. Like, instead of having these two things that were two setup experiences, two purchase experiences, not seamless, we could really think of it as a single product and take that approach. And so that's the approach that we're on. Now, we're highly embracing of all third-party alternatives, so you do not have to use any of these services, and I'll get to that later, if you have a third-party alternative, although I'd recommend in some cases for sure. But this is the model that we have for the first-party services. And those services span almost the full life cycle. You notice that we're not doing anything at all in ITSM. So the ServiceNow or the Provence or the Sharewell that do ITSM ticket management systems, we're not building a ticket management system in Azure. You'd use one of those folks as partners with us. But in just about every other space across management and security, there are first-party services that are available in Azure. Services that help you migrate onto the platform itself with Azure Migrate. That's as much as I'm going to talk about those today. Services that help you secure, we'll spend a lot of time on security management and threat protection and touch a little bit on Key Vault as well. Services that help you protect your data, backup and disaster recovery, actually backup is data and disaster recovery is more apps. Services that help you monitor everything from monitoring code issues with App Insights through to infrastructure issues and multi-VM scenarios as well. So kind of a breadth of DevOps monitoring capabilities. Up into some stuff I won't spend any time on, but it exists to help you do configurations, patching, which is free in Azure for virtual machines. So if you want to know whether your virtual machines are on the latest patch set, take advantage of what we call update management, that's patching in Azure. And then governance, which is a new area for us, but is an area of a lot of interest for our enterprise customers who typically have multiple departments, and one department has a set of responsibilities and another has a set of responsibilities, and they report in the ether to somebody else. And how do you work through who gets visibility to what resources, what policies do you set up to enable these people to play and yet be compliant with either external or internal forces? And then, of course, cost management, because the cloud and Azure is a consumption-based world. And so, like, what am I using drives what I pay for. And so how do I get a better handle on what I'm using, what I pay for? How do I do things like cost allocation across departments, or far more tactical things like understanding what my costs are and adjusting them so that the actual computing I need is the stuff I'm paying for? So that's the full landscape of things. I'm going to start in security, spend a good amount of time in security. I can't hit all of the services in today's session. I'm going to hit security, I'm going to hit backup, I'm going to hit monitoring. We'll do a little bit of Key Vault and hopefully a little bit of governance. The first thing I want to start in security is kind of take the step back away from the services, because new Azure customers, how many are using Azure today? I'm guessing most of you, right? So less applicable for you guys, so I'm going to go through it quickly, but new Azure customers are always like, what do you think about overall security in Azure and what's your overall focus? And so if you need this to, you know, share with upper management or other teams to broaden Azure deployments within your company, as you know, the security landscape is fundamentally evolving all the time as bad actors continue to come up with new and innovative ways to attack. There is an increasing complexity in terms of the tools that companies need to use to address these attacks. And there are rising costs associated with that because of the intensity and importance of the attacks. Obviously, it's a CEO level issue. And at the same time, you lucky folks, if you're security people, get paid a lot of money because it's a very important area, and frankly, the demand for security talent is much higher than the supply curve, which if you're a professional in the room that does that is an awesome thing for you. And if you're a company, kind of sucks because you'd love to have more skilled security folks. So if you're in the room to learn more about security, that'll help you too. But fundamentally, you need a simplifying thing from a business perspective because your resources may not be PhD level experts in security, and yet your attackers are. And so what tooling can you have to benefit from that? So at an all-up Azure level, how does Azure help? Well, Azure helps in three ways, and I'll actually start on the bottom left, which is kind of weird, but that's the way it works. I can't have a secure foundation at the top, right? That just doesn't work. But fundamentally, the first piece of it is the secure foundation. And this is what we do in the physical infrastructure. This is everything from, you know, making sure you can't break through the gates in a data center to making sure the data center has the latest biometric controls and the latest concrete block technology and all that stuff, all the way through to operational aspects, ensuring that the minimum number of people have the just-in-time, just-good-enough access to the Azure data centers to go ahead and make changes when they do. And even extends to the stuff that, you know, sometimes enterprise customers get uncomfortable with, but security stuff that Microsoft does for you that you have no dials to control. So a good example of that would be denial of service. We manage denial of service. Turns out we also have a monetized service we just announced, so don't let me confuse you if you know what that is. But we manage denial of service for you. You don't control any of the controls. That's our job. We figure it out. We use all the expertise from, you know, managing the Lizard Squad attacks of Xbox over many years and other different attacks that we've had on various of our infrastructure and protect you. And you do nothing for the secure foundation. That's what you get by choosing Microsoft as a vendor and Azure as the platform. Having said that, as soon as you put one virtual machine on Azure, one PaaS service, one piece of data, you've got a security job. You have a security job. I still have a security job, but you've got a security job. And I can help you with that. And the way that I help you with that is with built-in controls, but you got to use them. You got to follow the best practices. I don't always tell you and enforce that you have to do it, although on occasions we wonder whether we should. And so to help you in that, we have a set of built-in controls that span a breadth of technologies across network, identity, et cetera. In fact, I think I have just a quick slide. I promise I'll get deeper very shortly and into demo, which is obviously centered in identity with Active Directory and application access authenticated with Active Directory, obviously. Data and secret protection with Key Vault. Network security protection, NSGs, and more. Advanced threat protection, this notion that you should assume you're always being attacked and understand what that looks like, as well as protect. And so threat protection is assuming you've been attacked and understanding where those attacks come from. And then security management is protecting and making sure that you're protected. So all of this stuff exists in the platform. It doesn't mean it's all turned on by default. Some of it's free, some of it's paid, but you really need to be considering and using this. And so just kind of one takeaway slide, which I often present at higher level audiences as opposed to you guys who get it. This is us on the left-hand side, what Microsoft does. And of course, if you use infrastructure as a service, your joint responsibility for what you need to do for security is higher than for platform as a service. You have to do more with infrastructure as a service. So for example, you better make sure there's a virtual machine and inside that virtual machine is anti-malware, simple example. If you're using platform as a service, we've already figured out the anti-malware part in the virtual machine. All you need to worry about is the platform piece. And so your responsibility is lower, but it isn't zero in platform as a service either. So you know, if you're doing a web application, do you have a web application firewall in front of it as an example? So your responsibility is highest in IaaS, gets lower as we take more of the control for the management and security aspects. So starting really tactically, and I spend a fair amount of time tactically in this talk, a good number of customers start with putting virtual machines on Azure. Many in your, in the room, of course, are building apps beyond that. But a good number of customers start here. And these are the three things that I recommend every customer does. And unfortunately, when you look at the sum of all the customers using Azure, they're not doing it today. And so you should absolutely, whether you use a Microsoft or non-Microsoft product, and I'll come to that on the next slide quickly, ensure that your resources are secure. You should absolutely make sure that your data is protected. If you have a production virtual machine and it's not backed up, then you're in trouble when something goes wrong. And so you've got to do that. And then applications need to keep working. And when applications go wrong and stuff goes wrong, then you need to have information to help you solve that problem as quickly as possible. And that's why you need monitoring, monitoring into the app code, monitoring into the app infrastructure, monitoring. Every production VM in the technical sense needs all three of these things, and I'll show you the Microsoft services that enable it. I will also just for the one final time repeat that there are a set of partner services here. If you want to not, and the partner services at the bottom is highly incomplete. I've just given you a couple of examples. There's many others. If you wanted to choose a partner service that does security management and threat protection, not just antivirus, by the way. If you've got Symantec antivirus, you're not done here. If you're using Symantec CWP solution, you're done. That's great. I don't care. But do make sure that you go ahead and secure, backup, and monitor your information. And with that, I'll dive in and show you the Microsoft level products that are first party and built into the platform that enable that. And the first one we're going to start with is Security Center. So what does Security Center do? Security Center does fundamentally three things. One, it solves the visibility problem because you can't be secure if you don't know what you've got. And so first you need to understand, like, what is the security posture of all of my resources? Let me see what that looks like. So that's step one. Step two is then, okay, I see it. Is it good? Is it bad? In my case, I have the ugliest subscription known to mankind. As you'll see, it is ugly. There's red all over the place. There's security issues everywhere. I hope your subscription doesn't look like that. But if it does, fix it. Okay, that's step two. And then step three is going ahead and taking the alternative depth and defense and depth approach, which is great, I protected, but who's attacking me? And understanding who is attacking me, where they're attacking me from, what the attack looks like, did I get compromised? If I'm compromised, what do I do about it? That piece. And so that's fundamentally what Security Center provides you. And so with that, let me go ahead and drop out of slides. So over here, Security Center is this little shield here. You guys probably have a bigger menu item than me. Do you want me to make that bigger? I probably should, right? Yeah. Remind me if I forget as I go past different windows because I didn't do it at the beginning. So this is Security Center. Just an aside, I've turned on Security Center. I'm not going to do a licensing pitch, but it'll help. If you've never used Security Center before, there are two models. One is free, as in costs nothing. And what I'm going to talk to you about in the first 5 minutes at least is all free on the platform, and yet 20% of Azure VMs are using it. 80% of Azure VMs are not secured with something that's free on the platform. Like, that's a scary statistic for me as the vendor, because when one of those gets compromised, honestly, the press is going to be on Microsoft's VM gets compromised with something or other, even if you weren't following a best practice. So the reason I share the number is please, please, please turn it on. And that's why I wanted to give you the quick description is it's already on for me. If you had gone to Security Center and it wasn't on for you, then you would get to this onboarding tab here. This onboarding tab would then ask you to enable data collection. What enabling data collection does is install an agent into your virtual machines. And that agent sits in the agent extensions and siphons off security data that then gets put into machine learning and a bunch of other stuff to derive the views that you see here. Okay, so that's how the basic process works. And once again, all of the data collection piece that I just described and the next 10 minutes, I'll tell you when we get to paid or thereabouts, is free with the product. Which is, you know, why we think security is important to you. We didn't want to charge for this piece. So you can see here, first off, I have a specific set of recommendations. This is what I should do right away, sorted by machine learning. I also have various different pivots. So I have a compute pivot, a networking pivot, a storage pivot, an applications pivot. If I go look in the applications pivot, you'll see I have a bunch of web apps, okay? And so here are my various web apps. Some of those web apps are using app service. Some of those web apps are using virtual machines. A lot of them do not have a web application firewall. We recommend a web application firewall. You can see it straight away. Okay? So here's, and I told you I had a crazy little account going on here. And so here you can see my full list. I'm also missing application protection on one of my apps, which is this one right here. And so on these ones, on this 36, where I don't have a web application firewall, I can click in and I can choose. Maybe I want to use the Microsoft web application firewall. Boom. You get the idea. Click OK. Done. Applied. That one's fixed. 35 to go. Okay? So this is not just giving you visibility into the state of your applications, the state of your storage, the state of your compute. It's also giving you recommendations, and in many cases, it's also giving you a fix. So if I do storage, it will look at your SQL instances. And so here you can see my Azure SQL database. One database actually has auditing and threat protection on, which is good. But this one doesn't have it on at all, and that's bad. And so you can see here the state of my my databases. And by the way, I would tell you that when I've looked at customers who've come up to me at the end of presentations, what I very commonly find is that within a single customer, there are a large number of subscriptions, and one group knows security, gets security, has turned it on, and is in a solid place, but the other group doesn't have a clue. And so I see often within a single customer, one or two subscriptions covered with paid Security Center, one or two subscriptions covered with free Security Center, and then five just not covered at all. And so some of this is within your own companies, spreading the awareness across teams that are not that way inclined, that security is really important and you need to apply a consistent approach. Some of this is that there ought to be a better programmatic way for us to apply security, and there is. In fact, I could show it too in a minute, using policy. So here's your SQL servers in this state. We also look at your storage accounts. Are your storage accounts encrypted? Yep, they're encrypted. Life is good there. Okay, so that's the data view. We can also show you the compute view. And I've just loaded the compute view. I recognize this is a little bit of an eye chart from a distance. The compute view shows you, don't look too hard at it, I'll tell you what it is. This is the list of virtual machines that you have running in Azure, the blue ones. This also works, by the way, for on-premises. So if you want to protect virtual machines running on VMware ESX or Hyper-V on home base and data center, it does that too. Those are those purple virtual machines. And then using this agent that's installed in either of those, you can see that there are systems updates missing, the red ones here. You can see that endpoint protection or anti-malware is missing or installed. You can see vulnerabilities. Do they have the partner Qualys's agent, for example, installed for vulnerabilities? Is disk encryption on or off? And so if you go choose any one of those, I don't know, I'll choose one, Contoso, Web, something. See if that one works. Which one have I not done recently? Oh, that one actually looks pretty good because I turned it on. Let's do this one. So you can see here's a particular VM, and you can see I don't have disk encryption, and I don't have endpoint protection. And by the way, anti-malware on Azure is free. And so click, install Microsoft anti-malware, and I've got endpoint protection up and running as I go. Okay. So I can go ahead and look at each of these and dive on in. And just as an aside, I'm going to pull out a secret URL just for a second, because I thought about loading this. One of the pieces of feedback we got from Security Center was, this is good, but I would like to go ahead and apply the same set of security policies across multiple subscriptions. And so we are in the process of updating the user experience of Security Center. And bear with me that I get all the feature flags right and it loads the first time once we get past my dashboard. And you'll see that, you'll see or not see, depending if I got this working, a new tile is on its way. There we go. So I'm still in Security Center. I just did the 2.0 user experience. Does that make sense? That I don't think is public yet, although we did say it was in preview at RSA, so you can probably get access to it if you ask nicely. So this is similar in that those that compute view and network view and data view that you saw before are here. I also have an identity view in here as well, which is new. But the piece that I wanted to highlight is up here, we have this notion of policies and compliance. And so in that scenario I described, where you have one subscription that is actually using Security Center and five that are not, you can see that visually there. And so in my case, I just happened to have one subscription. But if you had five subscriptions, three were covered by paid security, one was covered by free security, it's right there in the new view. And because we've built on top of Azure policy, which is a whole session in itself, but fundamentally a policy is a set of rules. You must use A2 VM sizes because you're a developer. You must use D2 VM sizes because you're not. You're going in production. Every virtual machine must have encrypted disk. Got it. You must use ExpressRoute. Rules, true, false. And then you take those rules and combine them into initiatives. And then you have a set of policies that you can apply in a number of different ways. And so the net of it is you can create a set of security policies here. It's on the left-hand side. And then go ahead and apply the security policies to this subscription and then copy and paste, if you like, those policies to multiple subscriptions. So it makes it much easier to bulk set up your security approach across multiple subscriptions because you don't have to be doing it one at a time. And then you can measure against it and report against it, which is what policy compliance and governance are. Okay, all using Azure policy, which is not yet generally available, but should be within the next month or so. And so it's in preview right now. It's available for use. It's just in preview. So there's ways of understanding what is potentially problematic and in terms of needs protection and fixing it. And then there's ways of scaling that protection using policies across multiple subscriptions. Hey, I've got no issues with identity, but that probably makes sense seeing as I'm the only user in here. But if I had roles set up wrong, then it would tell me that. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the old UI because there's still a few bugs in the new UI. And I'm going to go to the second area. Well, sorry, the third area. So the third area is, great, you've looked in the security of each of your data and applications and networking compute, and you're secure, right? Yes, except you're going to be attacked. It's just the way the world works. And in particular, if you don't follow best practices, please do. You're definitely going to be attacked. And so wouldn't you want to know who's attacking you? And so what I clicked into here is what we call security alerts. And what security alerts does is, in fact, listen for attacks incoming or outgoing traffic to botnets and the like. Within your resources. And so you can see, or if you're really, really up the front, you can see things like RDP brute force attacks, which is probably the most common attack, where everybody knows that management ports need to be open so that people can manage virtual machines. And it's funny, I didn't even find you. There's not one RDP brute force attack in my list at the start. That's pretty funny. There's one now. Perfect. Thank you. And so everybody knows you need to keep the management ports open on a Linux or a Windows virtual machine. By the way, this works for both Windows and Linux. and so that you can go manage those ports. And yet, if you have a password that's weak, someone can take over your virtual machine in your data center or in Azure. And so, you know, RDP tickling virtual machines kind of happens 100,000 times a month. It's kind of scary. And so if you have a super weak password, like password, it's owned like that. And then someone will traverse their way through your subnets, and like, it's a bad day for all of us, to be honest. So RDP brute force is a big deal. You can see RDP brute force attacks in here. You can see SQL injections. You can see when a suspicious process was executed. You can see brute force logins, you name it. You can see that full list of security events. In the background, oh, firstly, this is not batched. This is real time. So this is real-time data. There's obviously a bunch of machine learning that's going on, not the least of which is to prioritize which of these we think you should deal with first from the broad set. And you can see my subscription is overly noisy because it's fun to demo this way. Hopefully yours isn't this noisy. So great. One of the challenges with this, however, is you just have a whole long list of events, right? And a whole long list of events is interesting, but in general, when somebody attacks, there's a sequence. You RDP brute force a virtual machine. Once you do that, you're in it. And then you, I don't know, try and brute force the next one or run a suspicious process or do something. And it's kind of hard to figure out from this list and in general in this space what event correlates with what event so that you can figure out what really happened. Was this five different attacks or was it one? And so to help you with that, we have created correlations between these events using some fancy machine learning and created what are called security incidents, which I just highlighted. And an incident is a series of events that we believe are all related together, okay? And so I have an incident that I pre-baked earlier that when you click in this, it'll give you a list view of the incident, and then you can actually go from the list view of the incident, if you click one more time, this just takes a while to load, which is why I have it up, into a graphical view. And from this graphical view of this particular incident, I can learn all types of things. Once again, apologies, and I think this really doesn't like being scaled very well. But yeah, I think it's, I'm just gonna leave it there, so I'm gonna talk to it. Up the front can verify where I'm at. So over here you can see this, or not, that this is a suspicious RDP brute force. And so there was an RDP brute force on this virtual machine, Contoso, Web, whatever it is, FE1. And then after that, then there is a username here, and this username is Abby Becker. And if I clicked in here, it would say that Abby Becker logged into this machine from an unknown location. This was the first time Abby Becker had logged into this machine. And then Abby Becker logged into the second machine and executed a suspicious process. Huh. And actually, right up there is the event that says sign in from an unfamiliar location. And so just by looking at, if you're up the front, this graphical view, I can quickly see that my virtual machine was brute forced by an attacker who then impersonated a real user account, Abby Becker. And then that Abby Becker account went and attacked another virtual machine, and then subsequently dropped a suspicious process on that virtual machine. And so, well, firstly, I reset Abby Becker's password pretty quickly. I better take those two virtual machines offline, and I've shut the attacker down. And the amount of work historically that it takes a security expert to get to that conclusion is a lot. And we build that all for you. And just to be clear, clever people in security is still needed. We don't do everything. But what we can do to correlate things together, users and resources, in a single view will save you time and security incidents. And here's an example of it. And then we also have, on the right-hand side, although I won't go into details of it, but where we have specific issues that can be fixed, there are playbooks that can help take you through what to do with these. You can use logic apps to build actions that take place in an automated way when things are picked up and so on and so on. So you can extend this to be building best practices and moving from there. The piece I said I was going to tell you and I didn't, the security alerts piece from here to the end, as soon as I transition to this, this is paid. So being able to see what you get, being able to fix what you have, that's free for Azure. It's paid for on-premises. And then this incident stuff is paid on Azure as you go further forward. Behind the scenes, it's using the Microsoft Security Intelligence Graph, obviously, and all the data associated with that. I don't have time to show you today, but you can also get a graphical view of the world, and you can see all of your virtual machines where they are in Azure data centers or not, and more importantly, you can see on that view the data that is coming or going from certain IP addresses. So you're probably being attacked by a botnet in New Zealand if you wondered where my accent was from. That's maybe not the end of the world, but if there's a machine inside your organization that's talking, externally sending traffic to that botnet, that's probably the end of the world. And you want to shut that machine down pretty quickly. And you can see that quickly in a graphical view, and we'll even tell you the, you know, this bad IP address in New Zealand is owned by some, I can riff on New Zealand because I'm a New Zealander, right? Is owned by some bad guy, and here's the history of this group and how they operate and the type of malware they do. So there's some IP that we give you from a reporting perspective to help you fix the problem. Okay, so the takeaway here quickly is please turn on at least free security center for everybody. If you're an enterprise customer, you should be having, in my opinion, threat protection and paid security. I'm going to run out of time. No, I'm probably good. I'll just show you one other thing quickly and talk to one final one. The management port thing is actually a big deal on virtual machines. And as I mentioned, it's by far the easiest way to attack somebody because social engineering on passwords still is what it is. And so what we did here is build a set of tooling which we call just-in-time virtual machine access that takes the management port paradigm and flips it on its head. The usual paradigm is you have to open port 22 and, what is it, 3901? It'll come back in. Whatever. What's the RDP port, people? There you go. That's good. You have to open those up for enabling management. But what if, instead of that, you could go ahead and close them? And so what I would do here, I have to be careful, that'll kill my demo at Red Hat conference tomorrow where I'm flying. Let me do this one. So if I go ahead here and enable what's called just-in-time access on this virtual machine, then I'm going to be able to shut down the ports except when a legitimate person wants to go ahead and manage them. And it's dangerous just choosing a random VM by the looks of things. And once that happens, then they request access to open the ports. So it flips the paradigm on its head. Something's going on there, so let me try a different one. What's going on here? Drop that one off. A bunch of these subscriptions are literally the development team for backups, virtual machines, so sometimes there's some funky things going on. Okay, for whatever reason, this isn't working right now. What you would normally see is a port, and so for instance, port 22 for SSH or whatever, and then whether it was open or not, what IP address had access to it and so on. Maybe I'll get better luck if I go look in configured. If I go look in configured, once I've successfully turned on JIT to request access, yeah, that works. To request access, I come in here and I say, I want access to this Red Hat VM. I want it only from my IP address, and I want access for 1 hour only. Please open the port, okay? And the configure thing is actually the reverse of that, which is on this VM, people can request access to port 22 only, because it's SSH, for some time period from either IP addresses or range. At this point, if I have admin rights to do that, which I do in this case, then boom, I'm in already. I can access that VM and I can remote desktop into it, or SSH in this case, because it's Red Hat, for the next hour. At the end of the hour, the port's closed. And so the attack service goes from being 24/7, all my management ports are being tickled, to 1 hour from my one IP address, somebody can attack. Well, that's a whole lot better and much more secure. So, just-in-time VM access is included in the same paid tier that has the security alerts. The final one is app adaptive controls. This is app whitelisting. App whitelisting has been around a long time. It's honestly been a failure. One of the reasons that app whitelisting is not a failure is because if you could know all of the apps that were good and not, and all those that were bad, it's actually an incredibly useful thing from a security perspective. But the if you could know is really hard. And so what we do is run your virtual machine over a course of a couple of weeks, assuming that you don't get hacked in those couple of weeks. Then we use machine learning to profile the processes that are running, and we tell you, well, we use machine learning, we profiled this VM, here's the set of what we think are the normal workloads running on a web server. Use your human brain to go look through and confirm that life is good, but we're going to prompt you with that list. And then once you've got that list, lock it and go from there. And so the painful part of app whitelisting has been writing down the list of applications that you think might be needed by the application. We use machine learning on the running virtual machine to simplify that piece. Certainly machine learning on clients is almost impossible because people install stuff all over the place. And machine learning on a static server actually is a really good security control, because as soon as somebody runs a suspicious process, it doesn't run because it's being whitelisted. So that's also available. Okay, cool. So there's a quick tour through the security aspects with one more thing that I'll only touch lightly on. But let me just give you a couple of slides first. I wish I had more time for this one. So Key Vault is the other thing I wanted to talk to in security. And Key Vault, if you're a developer, you should be using. Who's using Key Vault? I know at least one person in the room is. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, cool. The issues here are quite straightforward. Sadly, lots of people's private keys used to be, I don't think they're quite as many these days, but published on GitHub. It's not that hard to do, right? It's in your code's on GitHub, whee! That's not exactly good. So everybody go to their GitHub and make sure they don't have their private keys on GitHub, because like you can see how many were there in September 2016, it was staggering. That's one issue. The second issue is certificate management is not exactly the most fun job. And on occasions, even Microsoft, I don't think in recent years, but certainly 3 or 4 years ago, you would see our own services went down because, oops, somebody forgot to update the expiring certificate. And so you need to rotate your certificates on a regular basis, and if not, outages occur. And so to fix those issues, this is where we have Azure Key Vault, which is backed by hardware HSMs at the end of the day. And stores your secrets, your keys, or your certificates, and then puts process around them, so that instead of putting your connection string in the config file with all of the information, you put a secret in Azure Key Vault, and then you look up that secret from Azure Key Vault, and that secret's your connection string, and then off you go and run with it. Instead of you managing your certificate, you put your certificate in Key Vault and you manage in the Key Vault process. So this has helped us initially in Azure ourselves, manning Azure. It was one of the reasons we built it in the first place. And is incredibly useful if you are building any app that has any connection strings and any app that has any certificates, which is just about every app I can think of that does anything useful, to go take advantage of. I promised I wouldn't write any code, so I won't. Extra quickly, Key Vaults are really easy. You go into Key Vault, you add them. They're also insanely economical. It's not free, but it's near enough to. Oh, yeah, sure. Thank you for reminding me. Okay, cool. And so here I am. Here's a couple of Key Vaults. These two Key Vaults I actually have no permissions to. Key Vaults have obviously user access on it. You can think why. So I'm in the subscription, but I have no access to that Key Vault whatsoever, which is a shame because I wanted to use it today. So instead I created a Scott playing one earlier today. In there you store things, keys, secrets, and certificates. Here's a crazy quick example. My new connection string, and then connection string, blah, blah, blah. There's your actual connection string. And you can set an activation date and an expiry date and have it enabled, and then you have a secret. And then the secret has, if I click in here, an identifier. And then you go ahead and use the identifier plus another piece of information in your application to go pull the connection string out of it. And you can version and go from there. So no longer do you have something in GitHub that anyone can do anything useful with. There's also an AD element in this in terms of authing, and you hook your application up to AD as you go to it. I recognize that probably wasn't enough for you to actionably use Key Vault. However, I recommend you absolutely look at it for secrets and then also for certificate management. Here's my certificate. Here's the expiry date. It's right here. I know it. I see it. Off I go. And I created that one this morning, so I'm good for another year on that one. There's a 12-month rotation on those. Okay. So that's a brief look at security. There's also more security stuff, like obviously SQL databases have a threat protection and auditing piece in it as well that I could talk to. There's attestation services, but that's as far as we'll go for today. In terms of backup, this one's quite straightforward. Why do I do it? Because we make mistakes. There's been several embarrassing cases where people blew away their whole database and called Scott Guthrie and said, help, we blew away our database. It was embarrassing for them. It was kind of embarrassing for us because, like, we take three copies of your data, but if you delete one copy of your data, we'll delete three copies of your data. We keep taking three copies of your data because we use cheap storage, and if one piece of that storage fails, we want to make sure that you lose no data. But we're not snapshotting automatically. We're snapshotting if you tell us to. And that's what Azure Backup is, to snapshot as you move further forward. And so if you make human errors, if your application corrupts things, you know, accidentally corrupts lines in databases, then you need a snapshot. And then obviously the super ugly scenario, which wasn't as ugly before I wrote the slide, but with WannaCry and all that other stuff, if you get ransomware, then you really, really, really want backups. And I'll do a quick example of that just for giggles in a second. So one of the things about Azure Backup, and by the way, in general, this stuff, is that we really want to make it easy for you guys to use. And so while there is a security center, and I just took you through it, and you want to use it, and there is actually a backup kind of center of the world, which is called a recovery vault, even if you're in a VM, so if we go here, I'm now leery of finding a random VM, so I'm going to find a Contoso web one, and we'll see what we can get. Where's Contoso web one? No, it's not there. Well, we'll use this one. Wasn't this one compromised by Abby Becker? Let's see what's going on. So this is the normal VM screen that hopefully every user that's ever used Azure has used, because it's probably the most popular thing. And you'll see right here about 2 weeks ago, we added security. And so this is single instance a security view. So this shows you the security issues with that VM. If you're using the free tier, it will only show you free stuff. If you're using the paid tier, it will show you paid stuff. There's no security alerts on this particular thing. And you can obviously go look at multiple VMs in Security Center. But if you're a one application person and you wanted to know what's wrong with your one VM, it's right here. Similarly, in backup, you backup here. You don't go buy a product called backup from a vendor. You don't install that product in a virtual machine. You don't count the number of virtual machines that you have to make sure that you've got enough of them and availability sets to make sure that you can back up all your stuff. You go in here and you say, huh, I want to go use, oh, I'll just use the default settings because I'm lazy, and you click enable backup, and that's it. Gee, that was hard. And so this process that used to be super painful, or at least marginally annoying, in terms of setting backups, because, as I said at the beginning, we've really merged the runtime platform and the management platform together, is super easy because you're taking advantage of a SaaS service that's doing all of the background stuff. Now, if I get a little bit less tongue-in-cheek about how many clicks it is, if I go back here, I can go take two different, here. I can go here, I can create a new place to store this, which is called a recovery vault. I can go use a new group or otherwise. I can create a new policy. Off I go. And here I am happily backing up. Restoring backups is also pretty straightforward. I do that over here in what we call a recovery services vault. And actually, I have no idea what stuff's backed up. Can I remember? I can't. That's a shame. So I'm just going to have to talk to it. I was just trying to remember. Oh, maybe this one has some. Let's have a look at a recovery services vault is where you store multiple backups. Think about it that way. And so if I go look in a recovery services vault, it will give me an overview, and it will explain that it either has one or no backups in it, or it has one or no ASR or disaster recovery solutions in it. This is taking a little while to load, which is not a good sign when you get that. Let me try one more time. Okay. Never mind, I'm going to keep moving. So with backup, one of the things that we did, which is just here, is create some security around it. And so the issue, one of the biggest issues with backup in general as relates to ransomware, I describe with this scenario. So yeah, here's a virtual machine. I didn't use just-in-time VM access. It got hacked by, you know, RDP brute forcing. The person's an admin. They install some poorly written piece of code. I've been ransomwared, right? That particular process is an admin process. It can do whatever the hell it wants on this box at this point because I'm owned. One of the things that these processes have got good at figuring out is if I'm using a backup solution, the ransomware guy's probably not going to get paid because I have a backup copy. But all the backup solutions work by putting an agent here and sucking the data back to some base. And I'm admin on the box, so I can just go find the backup process, figure out what the commands are to delete the backup, and run that backup directly from my ransomware. And then bad day for you, bad day for me, you know, payday for the ransomware guy. Sadly, real scenario. So if I go down here, sorry, I'm just having some window sizing issues, and pop this up. Obviously, I could show you the code of the ransomware app, but just to keep this simple, if I was a legitimate Azure admin and I wanted to delete a backup from a machine, I'd run this PowerShell script, or Bash, or you know whatever, but I'm just going to do it in PowerShell. And I'll explain the security pin in a minute, but so cool, I want to delete the backup. And surprise, thank heavens, it doesn't let me do that. And it isn't just because I put the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You can try any number combination you want. It won't work. And the reason is that we put multi-factor authentication into Azure Backup so that even if you are a legitimate admin, if you want to run an administrative task such as the following, then you need to go to the Azure portal and you need to generate the security pin. The security pin is actually only 6 numbers. But it lasts for exactly 5. Oh, wow. Things are not loving me at the moment. So you're just going to have to bear with me. So if I go in here, typically I would be able to see a security pin. I would click on the security pin. It would give me a number. That number would last for 5 minutes. I could then go to PowerShell and type in the number if I was a legitimate admin and wanted to delete the backup copy. But if I'm ransomware, the backups aren't even available to delete 99% of the time, and when they are, there's a 6-digit number you need to brute force over the course of 5 minutes. Do the maths, you can't. And so there's built-in protection against malware as part of the backup capability in Azure Backup, even if one of those guest machines gets compromised, which is super important. And frankly, not every, in fact, quite a few, of the backup vendors do not have that feature today. So hopefully they add it over time because that is a pretty scary scenario. Yeah? Yep. Oh, good question. I can spend a minute on that, sure. So the question from the front was, hey, what's this DR thing, loosely? So if I go back to, I can explain this quickly. So if I go back to the virtual machine blade, there is something called disaster recovery, which is in preview. What that is it enables you to have region availability for your resources. And so you want that for a couple of reasons. Reason one is for compliance reasons, people who are, for instance, needing to be compliant with ISO 27001 need to have a business continuity strategy. And I have a single VM or even an availability set in one region on Azure does not count as a business continuity strategy. And so what is your multi-region approach to enabling that? And so if I take, if I take one of the dev teams, because this is actually one of the dev teams that does that, it's VMs, and go apply disaster recovery to it, what you can do is replicate that virtual machine from one region to another region, okay? And this one's actually, because it's a dev team one, has already been set up to replicate. And so this one is replicating into Southeast Asia right now. And actually, if I scroll down, it should show me a map. somewhere. Oh, it's just coming. Hang on. No, it was just it was slow loading. It isn't actually configured. So if it isn't already configured, what it should show me is the current region it's running in, potential target regions for it to run in. Okay, so if a disaster happens, and I think this happened to Amazon once, right? The whole east region of the US went out, but you want your app to keep running, right? So put it in the west region. And so it shows you where do you want to go? Does this one have a map here? Oh, here we go. So this one is running wherever it is. I can't remember if it's purple or blue. But anyway, I'm going between purple or blue as my disaster recovery regions. I have other choices. I could go up to Japan. I could go. It needs to be in the rough vicinity geographic-wise. And so, cool, I'm going to go choose Japan East, and I'm going to take the defaults. It's going to take the availability set and everything and press enable. And for those of you who have ever done a DR project where you do application availability, this is like the world's most incredibly simple. My, you know, used to be 4-year-old and now was almost 11-year-old daughter can do this by pressing a finger on a screen. And so we are replicating all of the VNet infrastructure that's necessary, availability sets, et cetera, in Azure in another region. And should you need to fail over between regions because of us, which we hope you never have to, or if you need to be compliant, it's done. Okay. So that's what that does. This is an application availability concept. Okay. When a region goes down, you know, there's a power outage or a tornado or whatever, your application keeps running in another region, load balancer swaps over and keeps it running. This also doesn't preclude the need for backup. This doesn't help you when you lose data. And in fact, you need both and apply them both together. Thanks for asking. And then once that's set up, by the way, in the VM view, you'd be able to see, it's probably too quick because it's running, I think, but you'd be able to see a view of what that's looking like for the replication. And we'll replicate all changes backwards and forwards between the between the regions as we go. Just as a total aside, seeing as though if you're interested in new stuff, one of the other things coming up in the backup case is SQL workload backup. So today we back up virtual machines that are the whole virtual machine. But what if you wanted to do SQL running within a virtual machine? And do it with transaction logs. And so you had a 15-minute RPO, and you were able to back up the data and get the data back, you know, back it up continuously, basically, and get the data back. And so shortly you'll see us come out with, I'm not announcing it today, but I guess I'm talking about it. Shortly you'll see us come up with SQL workload backup as well. So you can back up that data for higher availability of the data than the virtual machine level. Using transaction logs on SQL Server specifically. Okay, quickly into monitoring, and I think we have some monitoring news tomorrow, which I can't really show you, but it's tomorrow. So in monitoring, the key here is you want to be able to get visibility in multiple levels. You want to get visibility into infrastructure, like a single VM. You want to get visibility into multiple VMs. You want to get visibility into lines of code and what in web apps if something went wrong, for example. You want to be able to traverse all of that. And so in general, I recommend that when people are monitoring their apps that you build a custom dashboard and you kind of pull in a bunch of controls. We have a number of pre-made ones and get a good end-to-end view. And so I'll just quickly show you monitoring, although I will definitely not do monitoring justice in the time we have. So if I jump out of here, back in here. So here is an example, and I'll zoom up. Here's an example dashboard. And let me take you through some of the things that are here. So at the world's most basic level, you can see I have some virtual machines. And here are the virtual machines, and this virtual machine, none of my virtual machines are doing anything particularly interesting. They're just sitting at less than 10%. But if your virtual machines were spiking at 100%, then you would obviously want to click in here and figure out why it's spiking at 100%. You know, is it you've incorrectly sized it relative to demand and you need to upscale it or whatever the deal is. Same thing on disk. These are just demos. So my disk usage is just fine. But if you had a disk issue, you would be able to see it here at an individual VM case. And you can also click into views. You can look at the health of in what we call solutions. You'll learn more about this one tomorrow. I didn't show you that. I just noticed it was there. Here is the SQL health, for example, that shows you there's a number of issues on SQL as you go further forward. So great, you can do the kind of individual perf, and there's a number of other metrics that you can measure outside of that. And of course, using Azure Monitor, you can pull a bunch of Azure health-centered metrics. Above that, in the case of virtual machines, one of the things that's really interesting to understand is the relationship between virtual machines. Because that didn't look like it scaled really nicely, did it? What often happens when you're trying to troubleshoot, I'm gonna have to go back to here, is you have like an entire architecture, and you have a web server connected to an application connected to a database server, and you're experiencing a performance issue, the web page isn't working properly. And you're asking, is it the code of the application tier? Is it the database infrastructure doesn't have enough capacity against it? Is there record locking contention going on? Is it the app tier? I don't have enough load balances. You have multiple tiers to think about where this error can be diagnosed. And in a number of cases, we found that customers actually struggle to then identify which of the machines are connected to which in this overall application that you think about from a monitoring perspective, because the person who wrote the code may have moved on to the next thing, and the person who's managing it doesn't really know, because there's no documentation that's any good that explains how these things are connected. And so what we have here is what we call a service map, and this technology installs a kernel driver that sniffs networking traffic. That then draws a map in real time between the various VMs and ports. And so you can see on the left-hand side, I've got a web server. Its VM is Contoso Web 1. It's connected to a SQL database, which is SQL Server 1. It's connected to a couple of Active Directories, discovered in real time. Okay, so it's not like guesswork based on something. It's actually what we really do. And you can see the ports that are open, and you can see any issues. It looks like there's a little bit of an issue here on this Active Directory. I'm not sure it's a big issue in this case because I didn't set up an interesting demo here. But for instance, if you could see that if you had a performance issue here and you had if you were noticing a performance issue here and you had performance issues over here, then you could figure that out by going into the more details over on this right-hand side. So this gives you a graphical view of the interrelation between multiple pieces of infrastructure to help you go further. And if graphical views run out for you, then you can actually go ahead and get into a log search world, which I also won't take you into. But fundamentally, we have a rich multivariate, low latency, high data query language that enables you to query any of the data that comes from security events, comes from infrastructure monitoring events, or comes from application monitoring events, and run queries against it to figure out anything you want, actually, against both relational and non-relational, which is a whole topic in itself, in addition to the views. I'll just stay in the views for the purpose of today. You do not need to enable network monitor. You do need to install the agent. We have an agent bundle with the agent, and that's one of the things that comes through. Yeah, and it works for Linux as well. Okay, and then quickly, the other area is the application area. And so this is where App Insights is helpful. This is a web app, it's Contoso Web, a retail web. I can see the server response of that website, I can see the page load time of that website, I can see the failed requests and served requests. I can see an application map like the service map I just showed you, but for an application. So you can see the availability, you can see the latency, you can see where the traffic went in terms of pages. This is actually helpful. App Insights is actually helpful not just for diagnosing live site issues, but for helping you design future iterations of your product, because you can actually understand the profile of which pages people are using and which ones no one's using, so why are you investing in them, and what issues you have in it. And so I can go through and see, I have a bunch of failures here, for instance. It looks like there's a get customer details method that is causing an issue. And I can drill in, and I'm not going to do it all today, but I can drill in and understand the specific issues and even get down to a line of code that has the issue here. And so it looks like I'm getting a response 500 off a page. And you know, there's the page URL, and off I go. I can even go assign a work item in source control to have a developer fix it. The way this technology works is by instrumenting your apps. And so you take the App Insights SDK, you write one line of code, and your app is spitting information out to Azure as it runs. And once again, you can use that information for LiveSite, but you can also use that information to inform what feature development you do next as you go forward. So in monitoring, I know I really flew fast and not a whole lot of detail, but you can go all the way from a single VM to multiple VMs to a line of code. And the base infrastructure for this stuff, for Security Center, and for the infrastructure stuff is all the same. We have an underlying singular log database, which came into place in September. So you can search all of these things together. We recognize that it's interesting to put security with normal monitoring information with application monitoring information together, because that's going to be the fastest way that you can troubleshoot problems, rather than having those as three different siloed services. And so they're now all built on the same log database, if you like, in the underlying GUI of Azure, which was codenamed Cousteau for anybody who has heard that name before. If you haven't, don't worry about it. Okay, so there's really fast through monitoring. And in the last few minutes, let me just hit one more topic. And that would be governance. And so super quickly, as I mentioned before, one of the things that we really want to do with Azure, and we're just getting started here, I don't claim we're done by any means, is really improve the way that we do governance. Some of this is enabling self-service user access control. Some of this is managing policies at scale, and some of this is cost. There are some constructs that are out there but are just getting started. So for instance, one of them is management groups. Who's heard of management groups? Very few people, right? Okay. So what a management group is, you can think of it as a container for subscriptions. One of the problems that our customers have is they have lots of subscriptions. And they're all kind of a single flat hierarchy. And if I was a partner and I was managing three customers, or if I was the global head of something and I had three regional leads, often the regions want their three subscriptions with their own control, but the global person wants some level of permissions to view in and some level of policy that needs to be applied uniformly across all of them. Same with a partner with the three customers. I want visibility and I go forward. The subscription construct doesn't do a great job of that by itself, but management groups enable you to group subscriptions together and then add additional metadata to it to enable that governance model. Okay, we're just getting started on management groups. You'll see more about them later. I just want to reference it because it enables better multi-tenant, if you like, within your customer base management. The second thing we really want to work on is also just getting started, is continuing to accelerate how quickly you as developers can get things to market. And so today, I think most of you kind of suffer through, frankly, a fairly long approval process, or just ignore it, before you go into production. And so that's not a very efficient way of doing things. And so what we would like to do is change from a model where you build stuff, it gets through a really long approval process, and you ultimately get it deployed, to here is the sandbox for production. Here is the set of policies that we agree that are set within your company and that you can use to build applications within. Here are those instrumented in CI/CD pipelines, et cetera, and go for it. We want to get to a place where policy is defined up front and you can play within that policy for a production environment. And then obviously somebody, IT person, is looking over your shoulder and looking for compliance, adjusting because you won't get the policy right the first time, and obviously doing the cost place. Our desire, therefore, is to drive more agility in how quickly developers can deploy, while also making sure that companies feel comfortable with the compliance aspects. So rather than putting that kind of real-time blocker every single time you deploy, set it up front in the correct environment to move forward. That's the vision. We are early in the vision. The first piece of that is actually creating these things called policies with Azure Policy. And so Azure Policy is currently in preview. You can set a set of rules with Azure Policy against your subscriptions. As I mentioned, thou shalt only use A2 VMs because you're a developer in a dev test box is the simplest example. And you can apply rules on anything. The Azure Policy is actually tightly integrated with ARM, So it's not some type of add-on thing. It's deep in the essence of how you deploy everything in Azure as it's part of the ARM policy, which really gives us a platform advantage in terms of applying policy across resource groups, subscriptions, the whole shebang, because it's in the literal deployment fabric of Azure itself. Once again, high level, but quick intro. Okay, cool. With that, the final topic quickly is cost management. As I mentioned earlier, because Azure is a pay-for-what-you-use environment, people really do want to know what they're using so they can figure out what they pay. To enable that, we have a, once again, free slash included with Azure cost management tool. Who's used it? Good, thank you. Cool. So this is an acquisition for a company we called, well, the company was called CloudIn. The Azure service will be called Azure Cost Management. Today you'll see the CloudIn experience because we acquired it and we haven't yet made it, you know, the Azure experience. Over time, you'll see it all be in the Azure portal. Today you pop out to the CloudIn portal. And so what this does is looks at the real-time information on your subscription, and you can do real-time reporting against usage in a number of different ways. And so quickly to that, the way you use that, just as an aside, the Azure Cost Management is available in the menu system. I have it as a favorite. You won't see it up here unless you've customized your menu system. If you type cost management plus billing or cost management, you'll be able to get to a page that then launches from within Azure, that then either sets you up, cost management, here we go, that either sets you up to link the two of them together because there's an onboarding process that you need to do between the two portals until we get fully integrated. That'll go away over time. And then you click go to cost management and you appear here. And so just super quickly, there's a couple of things you can do. Well, there's quite a few things you can do, but some of the things you can do. Instance utilization over time. So this actually, am I running batteries? No, I'm good. And this will show me the virtual machines that are using 75% of their capacity. I might want to upsize some of those. It's pretty scary to be using that much CPU. And then on the other hand, it's going to show me, you know, the virtual machines that are using 0 to 25% of capacity. I should probably downsize those, save me some money, use it for something else. Okay. It'll show me my usage over time. So here is different VM categories, what my mix is of those categories, so how many Bs and Fs and, you know, As and the alphabet soup of all the VMs that I'm using at various intervals, so I can balance against that. And so I go from there. I can show costs over time. I don't have it in this view, and I'm not going to click there quickly. But one of the things I can do here that's actually super useful is I can look at what the pricing would be for a reserved instance versus pay-as-you-go. And so if I'm going to run a workload and it's going to run for 6 months, I can either pay as I go and pay, you know, this amount for it, or I can pay a substantially reduced, up to 40%, I think, rate if I commit for running it for those 6 months over time. And so at some point, there's a break-even point. And so it will give you a break-even point and say, hey, based on this workload and what you're running, if you want to save 40%, then why don't you go buy a reserved instance and use that? I can also cost allocate across departments. This chart's one of many ways of doing it, but here you can see Contoso production environment versus the, you know, faked out integration environment versus R&D versus DevOps. I've created a hierarchy here of the various departments within my organization that I either want to provide visibility to cost in terms of what they're actually using, or accountability to cost. And of course, I export to Excel and all those things in terms of enabling accountability. All fed in real time from Azure APIs, so you know what's going on. Most customers who have turned this on, one of two things has honestly happened. The first thing that's happened is that they went and looked and said, hey, I can save some money here by downsizing some stuff or buying some reserved instances, so like, go do it. And then inevitably what we found is because they have access to real data or what their real costs are, that same set of customers in general went and invested more because their confidence in using the cloud went up because, like, hey, I know exactly what I'm spending my money on and I can see where it is. And so it's a good tool for customers to use. Certainly if you're a partner, it's a worthwhile tool to show your customers. It is 100% free today. Some pieces of it may or may not become paid over time. We put on our website that in July, Some pieces will become paid. We're still in discussion on what those pieces are and whether we'll actually do that, because it's easier to say they will become paid and then change your mind the other way around than say it's all free. But as of today, it's all free, and a good percentage of it at least will remain free for the foreseeable future to use as Azure. So once again, this is another one of those, if you've never used it, use it, because, or at least tell the person in your org that cares about this stuff, if it's not you, to use it. Yeah, you create, so there's some additional integration to make the tagging across Azure and the tagging in here holistic. The tagging in here is standalone from a cloud end perspective, but there's more opportunity there to integrate in a number of ways, and that's one of the ways that'll be easier over time for sure. Cool. So with that, that was your flyby. Thank you for staying. Thank you for listening. If you're using VMs on Azure, please turn on Security Center. Consider the paid thing. Turn on backup. Turn on log analytics. Or get the person in your org who actually does and cares about that stuff to do that stuff. Because it will help you, and it will honestly help me in terms of how secure and well-managed the overall platform is when you do it. Thanks for listening. Any questions, come up. Cheers. Thank you. I think you need to have permissions to the subscriptions at a subscription level. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely implements again. Yes, it's an NSG rule implementation.
Sure,
yeah.
I recognize that.
It rewrote all of them. Oh, okay. So it's still in preview. I don't know at that level of detail, but drop me a mail. Hang on, I'll give you a mail address. And anyone else, by the way, who has a detailed question, feel free to always yell out. This is me. And I'll confirm with the engineering team whether that issue's fixed or not fixed. But don't feel free to reach out, and I'll correct. I understand what you're saying. Great for editing NSG rules, but don't screw with ones I already have. That's your feedback. I got it. I'll make sure they're doing it right. SQL backup. It's a SQL backup aspect that works with the IaaS instances, and I don't yet know the answer to the managed question, but it's a good thing I should find out. Yeah. Also, if you want to drop a mail on that one, I'll make sure I find out for both you and me. Yeah. Seeing as though it's coming up, that's a good question to know the answer to. Thank you for asking it. Other stuff? How do we generate such good data for? How do we generate the data for threat detection? Yeah, really good question. So we use something that we call the Microsoft Graph, or the Security Intelligence Graph. And it fundamentally comes from all of our anti-malware, all of our cybersecurity efforts across the company, and is all pulled together. And so it is a gigantic piece of learning from all of Microsoft assets that's pulled together is where it comes from. And it's actually one of the very unique things you get when you're Azure. Because of the breadth of, we have everything from Xbox to Hotmail to Windows anti-malware Defender stuff, et cetera, and all of that goes into the soup. Yeah. Is there a way you can get direct access to the data of the graph? Oh, okay. If you want to demo the functionality, I think the answer to that is go to the Microsoft Hands-On Labs environment and find the Azure Security demo, and you'll see an example of that set there. Yeah. In fact, in general, there's 3 or 4 demos of this stuff on the Hands-On Lab environment that you guys can use. That's the second time I've been asked that question in a week. There probably should be, shouldn't there? That's a good question. What about storage accounts, and why can't I do that directly? I don't know the answer, but I got asked that in Warsaw about 4 days ago, so that's on my to-do list. I don't know of anything immediately on the roadmap, but it seems obvious, so I'm going to go ask why or why not. As I mentioned, I was in Warsaw last week, but the backup team and the storage team are now one team. There used to be two teams, and so I'm super curious if they didn't already figure that one out. But I will go figure it out myself. I just haven't been back here enough to answer the question. If you're curious, drop a mail and I'll get you the answer at the same time. Anything else? Okay, great. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. No, I believe it's integrated in now. Yeah. We went through a cycle of trying to minimize the number of crazy agents that we were installing, because at one point we had acquired so many things that it was complicated for you. Yeah, sure. Okay. Cost management for CSP. Cost management for CSP. As a CSP, you can use it for free. Go, have fun. You can create a service for your customers. Yep. Yet. Yeah. So you need management groups. That's what you need. And that's coming. But you can get a view customer by customer by customer. You can create a service with your customers to help optimize their stuff if you wanted to. You can party on right now. We know there's more you need to do on that piece. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, folks. Have a great night.